Državni ispitni center.
Maturità generale 2014.
Prova d'ascolto.
A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto d'inglese.
Questa prova d'esame si compone di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Per ciascuna parte ascolterete un testo e risponderete poi a un esercizio che a esso si ricollega. Dapprima leggerete l'esercizio, poi ascolterete ciascun testo per due volte e risolverete l'esercizio durante l'ascolto. L'inizio e la fine del testo saranno indicati dal seguente segnale acustico.
Scrivete le vostre risposte negli spazi appositamente previsti all'interno della prova, utilizzando la penna stilografica o la penna a sfera. Scrivete in modo leggibile e ortograficamente corretto. In caso di errore, tracciate un segno sulla risposta scorretta e scrivete accanto ad essa quella corretta. Alle risposte e alle correzioni scritte in modo illeggibile verranno assegnati 0 punti.
Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Vi auguriamo buon lavoro.
Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite la prova d'esame.
Section A. You will hear an interview with Richard Grant about his Malagarasi River expedition. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
When travel writer and journalist Richard Grant heard about a river in East Africa that no one had ever really explored before or written about, he couldn't resist the challenge. The river is the Malagarasi, which means the river of bad spirits. Undaunted by this less than encouraging name, Richard aimed to make the first descent and full exploration of the Malagarasi and also to travel to the source of the Nile. He set off with a map from the 1950s, and the travel memoirs of Richard Burton and John Hanning Speke, who came through this part of Africa on a fever-ravaged journey to Lake Tanganyika in 1856. Richard has written up his journey in Crazy River, a plunge into Africa. So, Richard, what was the impetus for this trip? Why did you take that plunge?
I'd always been interested in explorers, but it never occurred to me that there was still exploring left to be done, that there was still a 500-kilometre-long river in Africa no one had ever gone down or written about or described before. So it seemed like an opportunity of a lifetime.
And what, I mean, in your initial researches, obviously you went off with following in the footsteps to a degree of Burton and Speke. What background did you find out about this river?
Well, I couldn't find out anything about this river. You know, like any modern person, I went to the world's preeminent search engine and I typed it in, and there was almost nothing about this river. I found out that a fish study had been done. I found out that some 19th century explorers had crossed the river. And the two encyclopedias online disagreed as to which country the source of the river was in. No, it just seemed like a hole in our store of knowledge about the world that I was the man to fill it.
And the little bits that you could gather from the earlier explorers of Burton Speke, what impression did you get? What was it that conjured up the place for you?
Well, I mean, I kind of disregarded the river of bad spirits. I mean, one thing I had heard was that there was a lot of hippos and crocodiles in the river, and that there was sort of lions and hyenas and other sort of problematic creatures along the banks of the river, and I thought that was probably enough to give it a reputation as having bad spirits.
But it didn't put you off?
No, I'd been down an African river. I'd been down the Zambezi, and it was just, well, what we've been talking about, it was just the most wonderful experience I'd ever had. It was, it called forth all those sort of joyous, calm emotions.
Yeah,
and I was sort of looking to recreate that, but That's not what happened.
Intriguingly, to start a journey exploring a river in Central Africa, you started off the coast of Africa in Zanzibar. Why did you go there and what did you find?
Well, all these crazy 19th century explorers that went off looking for the source of the Nile, they all began their expeditions in Zanzibar, so I just wanted to kind of touch the same base there.
And how did you find it? Presumably a different experience than Richard Burton had, for instance.
Well, yeah, I mean, I met this kind of golf pro on the skids in a bar on the first night who spoke fluent Swahili, and he knew all the lowlife of Zanzibar very well. And so I ended up sort of getting waylaid for 3 weeks in dive bars and seedy nightclubs with this golf pro.
And what was it? I mean, what is it like as a destination, a tourist destination? It is a popular one, obviously.
You've got Stone Town, which is a kind of labyrinthine old stone city where you see the Arabian influence and the African influence and the Indian influence and the Shirazi influence. It's just sort of looks like a souk market and very kind of exotic looking. And then on the coast, you've got these throbbing Italian disco resorts, sort of one after another, sort of up and down the glorious white sands. And people are sort of doing yoga in their bikinis and the music goes all night. And
so that sounds like a culture shock.
Exactly.
Now you will hear the recording again.
When travel writer and journalist Richard Grant heard about a river in East Africa that no one had ever really explored before or written about, he couldn't resist the challenge. The river is the Malagarassi, which means the River of Bad Spirits. Undaunted by this less than encouraging name, Richard aimed to make the first descent and full exploration of the Malagarassi and also to travel to the source of the Nile. He set off with a map from the 1950s, and the travel memoirs of Richard Burton and John Hanning Speke, who came through this part of Africa on a fever-ravaged journey to Lake Tanganyika in 1856. Richard has written up his journey in Crazy River, a plunge into Africa. So, Richard, what was the impetus for this trip? Why did you take that plunge?
I'd always been interested in explorers, but it never occurred to me that there was still exploring left to be done, that there was still a 500-kilometre-long river in Africa no one had ever gone down or written about or described before. So it seemed like an opportunity of a lifetime.
And what, I mean, in your initial researches, obviously you went off with following in the footsteps to a degree of Burton and Speke. What background did you find out about this river?
Well, I couldn't find out anything about this river. You know, like any modern person, I went to the world's preeminent search engine and I typed it in, and there was almost nothing about this river. I found out that a fish study had been done. I found out that some 19th century explorers had crossed the river. And the two encyclopedias online disagreed as to which country the source of the river was in. No, it just seemed like a hole in our store of knowledge about the world that I was the man to fill it.
And the little bits that you could gather from the earlier explorers of Burton Speke, what impression did you get? What was it that conjured up the place for you?
Well, I mean, I kind of disregarded the River of Bad Spirits. I mean, one thing I had heard was that there was a lot of hippos and crocodiles in the river, and that there was sort of lions and hyenas and other sort of problematic creatures along the banks of the river, and I thought that was probably enough to give it a reputation as having bad spirits.
But it didn't put you off?
No, I'd been down an African river. I'd been down the Zambezi, and it was just, what we've been talking about, it was just the most wonderful experience I'd ever had. It was, it called forth all those sort of joyous, calm emotions.
Yeah,
and I was sort of looking to recreate that, That's not what happened.
Intriguingly, to start a journey exploring a river in Central Africa, you started off the coast of Africa in Zanzibar. Why did you go there and what did you find?
Well, all these crazy 19th century explorers that went off looking for the source of the Nile, they all began their expeditions in Zanzibar, so I just wanted to kind of touch the same base there.
And how did you find it? Presumably a different experience than Richard Burton had, for instance.
Well, yeah, I mean, I met this kind of golf pro on the skids in a bar on the first night who spoke fluent Swahili, and he knew all the lowlife of Zanzibar very well. And so I ended up sort of getting waylaid for 3 weeks in dive bars and seedy nightclubs with this golf pro.
And what was it? I mean, what is it like as a destination, a tourist destination? It is a popular one, obviously.
You've got Stone Town, which is a kind of labyrinthine old stone city where you see the Arabian influence and the African influence and the Indian influence and the Shirazi influence. It's just sort of looks like a souk market, mm-hmm. and very kind of exotic looking. And then on the coasts, you've got these throbbing Italian disco resorts, sort of one after another, sort of up and down the glorious white sands, and people are sort of doing yoga in their bikinis, and the music goes all night. And
so that sounds like a culture shock.
Exactly.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You will hear an interview with Dr. Claire Gerarda about her Vera Brittain. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
My guest today is Dr. Claire Gerarda, chair of the Royal College of GPs, the first woman in that job for half a century. Welcome, Claire. Tell us whom you've chosen and why.
Thank you. Well, I've chosen Vera Brittain because, like many young teenagers, I read her. Oh, I read Testament of Youth. At the time, First World War was always seen through the eyes of men. It was always seen as guns and the trenches and khaki and... And here, for the first time, was the First World War through the eyes of a woman.
Correct.
And though I didn't fully understand it at the time, what I was clearly, and other people gripped them, was this narrative that went through of love and this narrative of loss. And it was, I can't say it shaped my life, but certainly it was one of the most influential books that I read around about that time. And it marked for me the sort of transition from childish books to the sort of adult world. But actually, it's more recently, when I met her daughter, Shirley, in the House of Lords around the Health and Social Care Bill, that I went back and read Testament of Youth and found that not only was this amazing woman, Vera, a writer and a poet, she was also a politician, a broadcaster. She, as you said, was a pacifist and a feminist. She was also a mother and a wife. And what I find so extraordinary about her is we have now nearly 100 years of two very, very remarkable women, Vera and Shirley. And I just wanted to find out more about Vera and how Shirley viewed her and what she was like.
And Shirley is the person to tell us, and she's with us, Baroness Williams of Crosby, Shirley Williams, daughter of Vera Brittain, former Labour Cabinet Minister and a founder member of the SDP. Lady Williams, your mother was born very nearly 120 years ago, in 1893. What are your strongest, most immediate recollections of her?
Walking in the New Forest with her in the spring, talking about great subjects, like which way the world was going to go, whether violence was endemic in the human race and so you could never get away from it, but also looking at every little wildflower and butterfly we saw, which, like all the great Edwardian women, she could identify right down to its botanical or its biological name. It wasn't like a walk. It was like going through the most brilliantly coloured museum.
And yet she was doing so much else in her life, apart from being your mother. She was dedicated to so many causes. What do you feel you owe to her personally, as an individual, as opposed to what you might say the whole of British culture owes to her?
Well, what I owe her in the broad sense, I'm absolutely clear about, and that is a moral standard I can't attain to, but which is always at the back of my mind, saying, would this be living up to that standard? I remember, for example, she used to write to the tax authorities and say, I think you have undertaxed me. I think you forgot to take taxes off the royalties I got from my last book. Not many people do that. So even at that benign, sort of rather pedestrian level, but all the way up to her views about war and peace, she was, for me, deeply a moral icon of my life and of the people I knew. In more personal terms, which you're also thinking of, there was great sort of tension in her in the sense that a bit of her was very frivolous. Nothing gave her more pleasure than really silly frocks and they called them frocks too at that time, and hats and gloves and so on. She really got her whole spirit lifted when she got into a nice women's boutique and found a pair of gloves that she thought would suit her perfectly. But at the other end, deeply serious, I mean so serious that it was very hard to... She didn't have a great sense of humour. She didn't laugh a lot. She was frivolous, but she didn't laugh.
Now you will hear the recording again.
My guest today is Dr. Claire Gerada, chair of the Royal College of GPs, the first woman in that job for half a century. Welcome, Claire. Tell us whom you've chosen and why.
Thank you. Well, I've chosen Vera Brittain because, like many young teenagers, I read her. I read Testament of Youth. At the time, First World War was always seen through the eyes of men. It was always seen as guns and the trenches and khaki. And here, for the first time, was the First World War through the eyes of a woman.
Correct. Yeah.
And though I didn't fully understand it at the time, what I was clearly, and other people gripped them, was this narrative that went through of love and this narrative of loss. And it was, I can't say it shaped my life, but certainly it was one of the most influential books that I read around about that time. And it marked for me the sort of transition from childish books to the sort of adult world. But actually, it's more recently, when I met her daughter, Shirley, in the House of Lords around the Health and Social Care Bill, that I went back and read Testament of Youth and found that not only was this amazing woman, Vera, a writer and a poet, she was also a politician, a broadcaster. She, as you said, was a pacifist and a feminist. She was also a mother and a wife. And what I find so extraordinary about her is we have now nearly 100 years of two very, very remarkable women, Vera and Shirley. And I just wanted to find out more about Vera and how Shirley viewed her and what she was like.
And Shirley is the person to tell us, and she's with us, Baroness Williams of Crosby, Shirley Williams, daughter of Vera Brittain, former Labour Cabinet Minister and a founder member of the SDP. Lady Williams, your mother was born very nearly 120 years ago, in 1893. What are your strongest, most immediate recollections of her?
Walking in the New Forest with her in the spring, talking about great subjects, like which way the world was going to go, whether violence was endemic in the human race and so you could never get away from it, but also looking at every little wildflower and butterfly we saw, which, like all the great Edwardian women, she could identify right down to its botanical or its biological name. It wasn't like a walk. It was like going through the most brilliantly coloured museum.
And yet she was doing so much else in her life, apart from being your mother. She was dedicated to so many causes. What do you feel you owe to her personally, as an individual, as opposed to what you might say the whole of British culture owes to her?
Well, what I owe her in the broad sense, I'm absolutely clear about, and that is a moral standard I can't attain to, but which is always at the back of my mind, saying, would this be living up to that standard? I remember, for example, she used to write to the tax authorities and say, I think you have undertaxed me. I think you forgot to take taxes off the royalties I got from my last book. Not many people do that. So even at that benign, sort of rather pedestrian level, but all the way up to her views about war and peace, she was, for me, deeply a moral icon of my life and of the people I knew. In more personal terms, you're also thinking of, there was a great sort of tension in her in the sense that a bit of her was very frivolous. Nothing gave her more pleasure than really silly frocks. And they called them frocks too at that time, and hats and gloves and so on. She really got her whole spirit lifted when she got into a nice women's boutique and found a pair of gloves that she thought would suit her perfectly. But at the other end, deeply serious. I mean, so serious that it was very hard to... She didn't have a great sense of humour. She didn't laugh a lot. She was frivolous, but she didn't laugh.
This is the end of section B.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. Smettete di scrivere, chiudete la prova d'esame e posatela sull'orlo del banco insieme alla scheda di valutazione.
Ancora un cordiale saluto.